So I'm talking with Mark, who prefers not to be interviewed, but I'm going to tell everything he told me. They're having a camp meeting here, which they prefer not to have. Actually, nobody objects but one person, and everybody else seems enthusiastic, but I'm not going to cheat and record this. But Mark tells me he's been down in Santa Cruz occasionally. We knew each other, or at least spoke to each other at least once or twice, back 40, Red Church. And he's found camping in Santa Cruz when he was there a year ago was not particularly difficult way out in the Mission and Pelton area. He worked regularly because he kept a kind of, a quiet, low-profile camp.
There's always, when I was there before, there was that the church out at Pelton in Westcliff where the surfer statue is, and the father there or whoever ran that was, I've seen him run the cops off a few times trying to tell
really?
People they can't camp there. Oh, yeah, he was really decent folks. I don't remember. I talked to him several times. I remember him telling me that God had a plan for me, and they were just super nice.
But what is God's plan for you, Mark?
What is it? To be creative, be an artist. Have you ever seen the Jerry Garcia posters down there? They're psychedelic. They're all over Santa Cruz.
Might have.
That's my artwork, man. Yeah, yeah.
So you're to blame for those.
I pelted that place with them, and I still believe, you know, and the Grateful Dead was probably the best thing that ever happened.
You said you went down there to do silkscreen work yourself.
Yeah, I find work down there now and then. I work for a different couple companies when they're busy. I'll go down there, and a lot of time I hang out here.
Up here.
Oh, yeah, always.
How long have you camped? Have you camped with First That Came From The Homeless, or are you just checking in today?
I've camped on and off here for 40 years. You know, there was a time 40 years ago I felt like I was the only person here at night, and the numbers swell every day. You should get a good read on their warehousing people here now. The city of Berkeley stepped up for the winter shelter, and they're housing 75 people a night. But
you mean housing, but you mean by in, get in here, get out there.
Warehousing, yeah. And then
don't bring your property, don't bring your pets.
They actually allow pets. They allow them to bring in their dog. The only thing that's weird there to me is they got porta-johns in there inside the building.
They want the homeless to mess up the toilets?
Well, they do. You know, that's just the how it goes. But I got to say that there's coffee at night. There's coffee in the morning. There's a meal at night. There's always food in the morning. They're trying the best they can, but it's a very limited space for the thousand of people that are out here right now.
How many people does it house?
75 is the limit.
How many people do you estimate are unhoused up here?
I know they turn away several a night after 75, but unhoused here, I couldn't even tell you, dude. It's all over town. They're up in the hills. They're down at the marina. Go down the marina and check out the little RV camp that started down there, and people are actually parking. There's a huge homeless population down there. This is one of like three or four different tent camps around town. And I'm just here pitching the tent. I'm going to stand my ground, you know. That's basically why I'm here, is just to stand my ground.
Now, this is different than what you've done in the previous 40 years. You've kind of adopted a low profile up to now, or have you just adopted different stances at different times?
Most of the time I've been able to afford to be inside, and I find that impossible now. I paid $9 a week for my first place here. I remember paying I remember paying $200 for a third floor two-bedroom flat over in the Haight, and then I came back over here and paid $30-$35 a week. There used to be a lot of hotels that were like that, and that's just untouchable now. You know, they want I would imagine $2,500 to $3,000 is the basic what a two-bedroom goes for here. Now.
Last time you were indoors, you paid how much?
I don't even remember. It's been that long ago, but I just stopped. I think I stopped trying at some point, and I got lazy, and this became easy. And I take time just to sit down and be still a lot of the time, and it makes all the difference. We're on a planet in the middle of nowhere. This is awesome.
You seem happy enough, man.
I'm okay, man. Yeah, I really am.
Mark, is it Carol? Carol, is Mark.
Hey, Carol.
Mark. You're from San...
You from Santa Cruz also?
No, I think I brought a tent up, and you were someone who said, I need a tent.
Yeah, I did. I ended up getting something. I upgraded a little bit since then, but that tent's probably in that tent over
there. Yeah. That wasn't from me. I just was the bringer of the tent from a local poet who decided this was a really good idea over here.
Like yourself, a lot of people really stepped up. The food, especially around Christmas, was incredible here. The amount of the toiletries, things like that, that people buy, and they stop by every here, every day, and leave something. So people have, you know, some bread, something to eat, and it's just been good. I noticed that a lot of people are stepping up, especially in the city. The Asian churches are going out. You know, there's a law that prevents people from going out and feeding, and I think it's a damn good law because it protects people. But at the same time,
I don't agree with you.
Okay, that's okay. But there's two sides of my story too.
Go for it.
But it's a good thing, and they're going out, and the city's really not enforcing it. But a lot of the Asian churches are really stepped up and bring out hundreds of sandwiches and soup at a time, and they're going around and finding people in doorways. The only thing I've said about with homelessness out here now is there's people in their 90s living in doorways, and if we would take care of our elderly and women and children, it would really change the dynamic. You know, fuck me, I'm a guy, I can take care of myself, man. But we need to
take. Some women can take care of themselves too.
They will.
It's been rumored, I've heard.
Thank you. It wouldn't be you if you didn't say something.
I have to be politically correct here. I'm being watched.
But I think we should take care of the elderly. And, of course, not all of them want to be. It's got to be a choice. Some people are quite.
An elderly yourself, mister.
I am, yeah. I became eligible for the senior center this year. But I can't do it because they insist on watching Gunsmoke over there every damn day.
I'm not a Gunsmoke
fan. I'm not going.
That's still on?
Yeah. Reruns.
I'm done. But Robert, is great to see you. Really, man.
And we've been talking with
Mark.
Thanks, Mark. And, of course, occasionally with...
With Carol Denny. Yeah, glad to see you.
Me too.
All right. I'm curious about something, if you don't mind.
Can I keep interviewing?
Sure. Right. It's fine with me. It's all right with you. The solar panels are just really inspiring. Uh-huh. So is that keeping phones going or computers?
I think mostly phone. You would have to ask somebody else about that here. And Sam, who lives here, he usually sets that all up and runs it. But I believe they get enough charge to do the phones right now, and we haven't had a whole lot of sun up here lately either. So, but they are up and running.
So cool. Yeah, it's very inspiring.
Well, we need. There he is, right there. That'd be the guy to ask about that. But the one thing we need here in Berkeley is more access to toilets. To the at night, then during the day, every business has no shirt, no service. You know, don't even ask about coming in and using the bathroom. But there's two porta johns here, and it's about all that's available in town, unless you walk to other parks that are farther.
There is the People's Park Pissoir.
They lock that up at night, also though. So that's locked at night. City, did you? Could sit on city council for a bit?
No.
She tried. She sat on it in another sense.
I guess I do a lot of writing for Street Spirit and the Daily Planet.
That's a great paper, man.
And the Pepper Spray Times.
Yeah, no, good.
I was going to bring you up some copies of that, and I realize I put them all out. So I'm sorry. I was going to bring you some, too.
I want these back when you're finished with them.
Oh, okay. All right.
Even has your name on it. Just get your reminder.
Yeah. I have places to be. Sorry,
you better be on your way, Mark.
Yeah, it's good to see you, man. Yeah.
Here, let me give you. Here's where you can hear this show later. If you get to a computer, it's archived on the other side. There you go. You want the Pepper Spray Times and you're in Berkeley, where do you get it, Carol?
At the East Bay Media Center, at the Ecology Center, and then I bring some to the City Council if I'm on my way there. And then I think Paul hands out a few. And I'm planning to bring some down here to the Tent City in front of City Hall. It looks like they have a table with some literature, so they'd probably welcome that. Yeah.
They're having an informal meeting now, or regular camp meeting. I don't know where this so-called UN rapporteur is, but...
Well, they have a nice welcoming party here.
They have food if you're hungry.
Very cool.
I suspect I'm hungry, but I haven't yet dared to munch. So.
No, I'm good.
So, anything happening in Berkeley you want to talk about for anybody up, down in Santa Cruz?
Well, for the people of Santa Cruz, I guess we're about to watch a model that is taking place in your town happen up here. Our local merchant association, the Downtown Berkeley Association, is about to be given full control of our BART Plaza area, which they've remodeled several times. And I've been at the unveiling of each and every one and can assure you that each and every one was all about getting rid of the poor. So I'm trying to battle back at the next city council meeting and get it at least pulled off the consent calendar so there can be some discussion. I've talked to two city council members who see my point and are willing to speak about what looks like a terrible idea.
Two out of nine,
yeah. So it's clear to me from the calls I'm not getting that this is probably going to happen.
What about that Mayor Arguin, that liberal guy, the progressive?
That liberal guy who had 2 years of meetings with what was then called the Coalition on Homelessness. Well, the irony of him agreeing to this contract, which is gives them $50,000 more per year in addition to the $1.3 million they already get, which comes out of my pocket, so I'm thoroughly annoyed with this, is that in the same city council agenda, he gives himself a report card on how well he's doing on his homeless coalition promises and gives himself a secure A. It's very Trumpian to me.
Well, he is the mayor.
He is the mayor, but he thinks he's doing a great job. And here we are standing with about, I'd say several dozen tents in front of City Hall.
A
lovely
20 on this side and more on that side.
And more on that side, yeah. Lovely people looking for a cheap place to live and unable to find it. So I'm thrilled that he hasn't called a sweep on this area, which he certainly did on the day of his inauguration, as the first they came for the homeless group was just at the corner of City Hall. But we'll see. I think we're the people who should give him a report card, not he.
Of course, if he does call a sweep, at least first they came for the homeless showed that they weren't, if they're going away, they weren't going far.
They did not go far. And that's probably an excellent technique. I would say that has been effective here in Berkeley.
That's what they did up in Portland with Dignity Camp and then Dignity Village. They moved from place to place, although they did have the cover of the Wicks decision way back in 2000 when they did it, when there was a camping ban was suspended. And in Berkeley, is there a technical camping ban law? I'm not too clear on that.
There's a technical camping ban law, but it is also in it's floating right there next to all kinds of constitutional protections which are violated if there's no place to go. So that's what's in contention now is it's foolish to enact the camping law if technically a human being's body has to be somewhere unless you can float in the air.
You're such an idealist, Carol.
It's just funny to me. And it seems as though that slow recognition is appearing to happen, just not fast enough to take care of people who are in a serious amount of cold. I think it was 30 degrees last night nearby, so that's too much to ask.
How's the heat in your building?
In my building? I have good heat in my building, yeah.
Rent controlled?
No. I took over the building with a bunch of unruly tenants.
That's right.
And we were on rent strike for 5 years and then bought the building ourselves in an auction on the courthouse steps with I think it was True West Bank and the City of Berkeley were all for what we were doing, which was essentially taking over the building from the landlords who had let it really rot. And we slowly fixed it up, including the heat. I lived there for about 8 years with no heat at all. But it's a nice... A lot of blankets. What can I say?
Warm companions.
And a nice wool hat. So it's a great model, I think.
Pets? Do you allow pets?
Some people have pets. I'm not sure we allow that, so I won't say much about it.
I better keep that in the down low there.
All I know is it's a great way to go. Find a decrepit building and certainly in those days we had a much less liberal city council, but they saw the point that we were all tenants of the building itself and wanted to fix it up.
Does and that they happen much elsewhere in Berkeley?
I think there are three of them. I think there are three of them who, I don't think anybody has our history, though, of a five-year rent strike, essentially, where we pooled our money. We didn't just not pay rent. We put it into a bank account so that we could participate in the down payment and we could have a co-op, essentially a limited equity co-op is what it's called.
And,
But you should interview the people here, shouldn't you?
Oh, yeah, why not? I mean, I kind of, whoever bumps into me, as I usually tend to interview. But just to kind of conclude this, what years did you do the rent strike?
Oh, boy. It would have been, I think, in the late 80s. Yeah, I can't remember the first year.
Gus Newport? Or?
Now, I moved in just after the rent strike began. And I was the tipping point for the vote we had as tenants. There's still a few tenants there from before the rent strike who didn't want to be part of the co-op, and we just let them live there, you know, and treat them like anybody else. So,
like people who don't join a union but benefit from the union's activity.
It is a little like that, but they're wonderful people. They were my neighbors before we made this move, and I can understand how it might seem frightening to people. I guess it is. Oh, there's Sarah. Hi, Sarah. Hey, beautiful.
And we've been talking with Carol Denny. Menifee, Sarah, very quickly, I know, because you're... And Carol Denny, Cornerstone Carol, as I call her, longtime Berkeley activist, was there to report on the First That Came for the Homeless for different publications. I think she's no longer with Street Spirit newspaper. She's severed her ties, concerned with that paper. At some point, I may interview her about the reasons, because I still provide distribution of Street Spirit down here, though I'm not terribly happy with the content much of the time. You can find Steve Plaich's articles in Street Spirit or online at the Street Spirit website. There is several interviews with sort of activists on the periphery here, rather than at the center of the issue we all came together for, which was to report abuses against the homeless to this UN rep. Not that I had a lot of confidence or hope that this would lead anywhere. I'd have no idea where it's going to lead. But sort of I came in response to the call, and really mainly as a reporter to see what was going on rather than to present a lot of information from Santa Cruz. But it is available for this reporter if she wants to come on down here. I think she's mainly interested in the large urban areas. But there was some interesting discussion. We may not be playing all of it today. I may not be playing it all because this is only a two-hour show today. And it was quite a long session, too long to hold up a microphone while seated on cement for an hour and a half, I got to say. It's interesting to hear Carol Denny talk about rent strikes taking over a building. And I noticed that may play into my update on the city council meeting from 2 days ago. For some reason, I was moved to get to that city council meeting. I haven't been to every city council meeting. In fact, I've been trying to skip as many of them as I can because I feel it's not just talking to a brick wall. It's sort of creating the illusion that it's useful to talk to brick walls for other people. And I think a lot of people not only waste their time but encourage other people to waste their time, although there is a public aspect to it, and that's good, and there is a pressure aspect to it of a very limited sort, and that's good. Most of the pressure comes at city council when you bring large numbers of people to city council or engage in persistent protests. As I said before, I think, although it appeared that the Freedom Sleeper protest, with its only weekly appearance
and it's failure to, you know, maintain a kind of continuing homeless encampment like happened in Portland to create Dignity Village, or happened in Berkeley to create First They Came for the Homeless. It still had its impact. I think I don't think we can be held necessarily directly responsible for the decision by Mills, Garcia, and Bernal to suspend sleeping bat enforcement, suspend enforcement of laws around being in the park after dark, and allow people to camp in San Lorenzo Park 24 hours a day in a limited way, or at least for a limited number. I mean, that came from a variety of places, but one of the pressures was the encampments, and essentially also encouraging and enabling, yeah, that's the right word, all you Take Back Santa Cruzers and Rochelle Noroyan fans, are the council member at City Hall that wants to ban RVs at night to drive away the poor. Enabling is the right word. Enabling people to stand up, get together, and assert their rights, and assert their humanity, and assert their insistence and dignity, because only when they do it is it actually going to happen. And you can, you know, middle-class bougies from housed environments can talk all they want, and they can, you know, pitch tents, and that's a good thing, too. But it's when, you know, masses of people start to tell the cop, the police officer, to drop dead when he tells them to move. It tells the cop to go away when it demands that their property be returned. When this kind of resistance begins to happen in a widespread way, and when no one ever said it wasn't a risky kind of thing to do, particularly easy for someone inside a house like myself to make these kind of comments when no one's coming to confiscate my property, no one's coming to steal my blankets. But I still think, unfortunately, it's true. Anyway, I'll be talking a bit about city council soon, but I'm going to do a little bit more of the Berkeley interviews. And eventually we will get around to the discussion with the UN rapporteur. We might not get to all of it today, but that'll be coming up this coming Sunday on the 28th, I guess it is. But first, let's have another musical break, shall we? And here's one by Randy Rainbow. I should say another one by Randy Rainbow. Donald Trump, Grow Up. It's a parody that was sung and created as a video. It's a great video, too. In November of 2016, shortly after Pence and Trump were elected.
We are back, and joining us now is Vice President-elect Mike Pence. Mike, thanks so much for being with us.
It's great to be back, and couldn't be more honored. And
okay, let's cut the shit. Mike, everyone is talking about your recent visit to the musical Hamilton. Can you tell us what happened?
You know, when we arrived, we heard a few boos, and we heard some cheers. And
I believe we have some footage of that mixed reaction. Let's take a look at that. Your boyfriend Donald has started a shitstorm on Twitter, which has resulted in some people calling for a movement to boycott the musical, which is absolutely adorable. Have you seen his tweets regarding the incident?
Well, first off,
they say the cast of the show disrespected my buddy.
Okay.
He's so rude, yet he's tweeting demands for apologies. Because you got booed.
What is he, 12?
I get he's the boss, you're his bitch, but with all due respect, why don't you speak for yourself?
I do want to say,
and let me just ask one more thing, Mr. VP-elect.
Is the show as great as everyone says, and will you be going back?
Well, first off,
don't go back. Just a thought. I know the guy who plays the lead is hot. Stay on track, Buttercup. You're the president-elect. Grow up! And you swore if you won, you'd fight ISIS till that shit was gone. Donald,
babe,
what the hell? So far, only a thoughts of Broadway musical and SNL. Ay, 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 ay. Da, 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 Donald Trump. Da, da, Donald Trump, grow up. Ay, 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 ay. Da, 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 Donald Trump. Donald Trump, grow up. And next time, if you'd rather not be demonized, go see a show whose cast you have an ostracized. Like On Your Feet or Fiddler.
Actually, those won't work either.
Like Waitress or Matilda.
Never mind, Waitresses and Kids Hate You Too.
Like Jersey Boys, and no, they didn't vote for you in Jersey, did they? Like Wicked and Aladdin.
Definitely not Aladdin.
Or this one.
Lots of gays in this one.
Or this one.
You know he likes to grab them by the...
This one, or this one, or this one, or this one.
Listen, Mike, I'll give you the same advice about Broadway I gave Vanessa Hudgens after that last revival of Gigi closed. What was it?
Don't come back. Use your head. Just stay home and read a book instead. Don't renounce a Broadway play when you won't denounce the KKK. They said please, he said mean. The theater's tough when you're a drama queen. And it was quite a dig from an arguably racist and a misogynistic fascist pig. Da 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 Trump. Da 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 Trump, grow up. Da 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 Trump. Da 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 everybody.
What's going on over where you are?
Well, there's some people organizing something. It's a write-in thing, Homeless for Mayor. And
so this next interview is with Sarah Menefee, who is a writer for the People's Tribune, an activist with First That Came for the Homeless. She's housed herself. I've known her for decades. She was a supporter of the homeless civil rights, I don't know for how long, but certainly around the same time I was real active myself. So... here she is.
Hey, Sarah. Hey, beautiful.
And we've been talking with Carol Denny. Sarah Menefee, Sarah, very quickly, I know because you've got other people to talk to, but what's going on over where you are?
Well, there's some people organizing something. It's a write-in thing, Homeless for Mayor, and they don't have a person running. They're asking for people to write in homeless for mayor. And that will represent all the homeless people. So it's going to be just a campaign to bring homeless rights issues, homeless issues, which are never, never, never spoken to by politicians, certainly not in San Francisco. And, you know, where people on the streets are just having a horrible time, where they don't allow tents to stand, they don't allow tent communities to stand, but nobody...
Like Berkeley.
Yeah, like everywhere.
And like Oakland.
Yeah, like everywhere. And so it's the same struggle, and it's...
But are you saying
probably
San Francisco?
Harsher.
Is it more difficult for people with tents in San Francisco than, say, in Berkeley, where you this encampment has not been raided?
Yeah, but
for a while.
This is after 17 raids. There hasn't been anything organized like that over there, so people are just being pushed from here to there. So, excuse me. This campaign will probably. The idea is to set up a tent at City Hall that'll be a campaign headquarters, and move around to the different encampments. And
you'll be the mayor's advisor?
No, I'm not going to be anyone's advisor. No.
You're advising us.
No, I'm not.
You're not giving us advice.
No, I'm just telling you what's going on. Yeah.
Right.
No, I'm not advising anyone. I mean, my advice is keep an eye on what they're polling and talking about, and wherever you are,
raise the issue of, you know, that they can't defend that there's millions of homeless people, millions of people living in the street, and this richest of all countries. I mean, it's getting to be a mantra. Everybody knows it. It's been said a million times. You know, they've had 35 years and more to fix it, and they're not. It's not going to be fixed until people really rise up and demand it and actually change property relations. But, you know, that's going to have to come from the ground up. So
when is this mayoral election? Not that that has a hell of a lot to do with it.
In June, I think. I didn't even know that, but I found out.
Are you voting homeless in this case?
Oh, sure. Sure. Because I think until this question of homelessness, why is this system creating homelessness? Why is there a 25% in places like, you know, increase in places like here, you know, Oakland, LA, a lot of places, in San Francisco, they're just absolutely making their lives hell and miserable and chasing them from here to there and trying to move them out of town. So it's really a question of very basic rights.
What about those wonderful navigation centers I've heard?
Well, that they navigate you back out into the street. They've actually admitted that actually there isn't any housing on the other end of those. So it gives the people a break from being absolutely on the street. That's a good thing, but they need to change their name because they're not navigating people, you know, like a 30-day stay or a 60, 90-day stay. That's very nice. And then they've admitted it's back out into the street. But my concern about those places is they're using their existence, like they're going to do it here, for an excuse to further harass people who are independently trying to be in tents and gather together and form communities, you know, for community and protection and privacy, and for organizing, right? So that's okay. Now we've got these navigation centers and these shelters, and people, you know, don't get me started on the shelters.
Why not?
Well, because ask a homeless person what it's like and whether they'd be out in the elements or in a shelter catching a disease or a bug, you know, with no privacy at all. So
and being treated like
a prisoner. So you know, you would get that better story for someone who's been through the shelter system.
But you've given us a good update, and I thank you for your patience allowing yourself to be cornered into an interview.
Well, this isn't a corner, but
that's true. You could have escaped if you.
Yeah, I probably haven't had enough coffee yet, but you know, this is exciting. I'm very excited to see my comrades here, and. You know, I'm glad that the UN is paying attention to this. I don't have any, that this government is not going to do the right thing. It doesn't give a shit about the UN. It doesn't care about people's rights. It doesn't care about poverty.
But Obama was going to save us.
It's too late to talk about Obama. We got to deal with what we've got here. So
Joe Biden, Hillary Clinton.
Nobody's going to save us. We're going to save ourselves. We got to change the way this shit is done. And nobody that's allowed to get into the highest political office in this capitalist land is going to save us. They're there to take care of their class. Okay, the class they represent and the class that bankrolls them. So they've all got their nose in the same trough. So you know what? We're going to have to do it bottom up. And there's a lot of stirring. I mean, a lot of people are pissed now. And to me, the question of homelessness is the one they just, it's their Achilles heel. They can't. I mean, anybody with any decent human sense can see that it's wrong and that something needs to be done. And we're not talking about sweeping people into prison either or, you know, sweeping them out of sight so
curing
people don't
their mental
have to,
illnesses and their alcohol problems and their drug abuse, and then all will be well.
Well, let's do that all throughout society by having a society that you know, that makes people happy and that allows them leisure to be creative and allows them to be with their families and not either work them to death or throw them out into the street. And you know what? we'll be on some high on life and chewing on the good stuff.
On each other.
Dancing in the street. And we're not going to have all this misery, and we're not going to have people having to self-medicate. So, you know, it all goes back to what kind of culture do you have? Do you have something controlled by a little handful of billionaires that just, if they can't exploit you, you can go die, and they're going to help you along the way, and they're going to make your last days miserable as possible? Well, you know what? Fuck that. That's
well, they try to do so with equal misery. They believe in a sort of an equality of misery.
No, they don't. They don't.
Well, for the poor, at least. Well, we can't afford to give misery to the rich. That would be wrong.
Well, you know, I don't know. I'm not in a very sarcastic mood here.
I am. I appreciate your giving us the straight dope.
I'm not, because people are dying, you know. People are dying and suffering, and they're being stigmatized for trying, you know, they're stigmatized and blamed. It's victim blaming, and it's like, oh, you're not a perfect saint, so you don't, you know, you're self-medicating out there, you're trying to stay warm, you're having a little hit on a bottle to try to get through the night, you know, you're taking a drug that makes you feel better for a minute because
it relieves your pain if you have a disability.
It relieves your pain. Right? And it's probably better, no worse than some pharmaceutical they put you on if you could afford it, you know? And so everybody knows this. This is not rocket science. People just look around, you know? So anyway, here we are. And the fact that a little tent, you know, a little tent action, a little tent community has so much support from so many people in the community who get it, who
write
about
it. Three little tent communities.
Yeah, three now. Four, maybe. You know. And more in Oakland and more around here.
I'm told the Berkeley authorities have stopped busting other encampments as well. So, but is that accurate, you know?
I don't know. I didn't hear that, but maybe they've run out of busting money. I don't know, you know.
And I don't either. I'll keep, however, trying to find out.
Yeah,
and we've been talking with
Sarah Menifee.
Anything you want to conclude with?
First They Came for the Homeless. I'm a founding member.
And where can people get more information about that cause and also other issues that where you've written on those subjects?
The People's Tribune, peoplestribune.org. I'm a board member. It's a national monthly paper that writes on the revolutionary struggle, especially of the around survival issues. It's written by the leaders of these movements. First They Came for the Homeless on Evil Facebook. We have a page there. And I'm Sarah Menifee. And
Sarah Menefee.
Menifee. And so I'm around here and there on the internet and on social media and in the People's Tribune. The current issue of the People's Tribune has an article by Mike Zint, who's my co-founder of First They Came for the Homeless, and really a great genius behind a lot of this that you're looking around and seeing.
We've actually interviewed him. Yeah.
Yeah, along with everyone here.
I hope to find him here. Where is he? Is he hiding out?
He's being interviewed over there.
Oh, there he is. Ah, gotcha.
Maybe they're done.
Maybe they're just chatting.
I think someone got him coffee, so that's good.
Well, I'm going to go pig out on something over here.
Yeah. Anyway, for somebody who said they didn't feel like talking, I blathered on a long time.
That's good. I'm glad you blabbered.
It's good to see you. I know we've been in the trenches, similar trenches for a long time.
Adjacent trenches.
Longer than we wish to say. But, you know, I think that, you know, I think the general social attitude is broadening out in terms of this question. A lot more people are getting it, that it could happen to them and that it's systemic and that something needs to be done about it on that level. It's not just individual failings. It can't possibly be.
Carol, are you in agreement with Sarah's analysis?
Yeah.
More people are coming around. I I'm not sure if I agree with that or not. I might. I have to.
From what I hear.
But letting it settle on me to see if
more
I think that's true.
And more politicians. Yeah.
Well, they.
You know, you just have to speak to this. It's just. And if the UN is going to come down here and say, what the. You know, what the frack is going on in the richest country in the world that can spend like, what, 60% of its wealth that they extract from us on the military, going and, you know, causing suffering all over the world, and people are being abandoned, and they've been, you know, it's nothing new. People have been in the streets for almost 40 years, but...
Longer.
Yeah, longer, but I mean in a mass way. And it's so fixable, so easily, but not under the paradigm of capitalism and private property and profit. So that's my mantra.
Indeed.
Yeah, and I think people are starting to question it on that level.
I'm still wondering if that's true in a broader way than 10 or 20 years ago. Maybe.
Yeah, so.
You think it is?
I think very few people would think that things are working well.
The economy is booming. What do you mean?
I think they're happy on Wall Street. Yeah.
All the stock market is up.
Yeah. Like 1929 all over again. Another new Gilded Age. Yippee. My mother taught me to dance to Charleston, so I think it's time.
You're going to have to teach me how to dance to Charleston. And we've been talking with Sarah Menefee and Carol Denny. And we're talking with...
Jana. My last name's Renuzzi. And it's a pleasure to hear the comments so far. And added to that is the stigma of what people think who are the homeless. And so there's a lot of antiquated, outdated ideas. We all have to go to the bathroom. We all get dirty. We all have myriads of reasons why affordable housing is difficult, and we're all different types of people. So I'm honored to be able to hang out with different types of people who are my friends. And so the stigma of saying, oh no, it doesn't look nice, people don't look nice, oh, there is no homeless problem because most of them are invisible to me, oh, how did they get into this plight, is wrong. And they have to change that concept and get real, because it's coming for all of us, the unaffordable housing.
Anybody, how long have you had this perception?
I've had this perception, but it's gotten into focus for the last year when I wanted to feel like I could do something with national politics and couldn't for me. So I jumped into this local issue, and I'm there witnessing the humanity and the caring and the compassion and the sharing and the lack of selfishness, the hardship, the prejudice, and it's heartbreaking that people don't have a mindset to know that we are all the same people, and we have to take care of people regardless of what they might do. But they are all
one deserving. Family.
We're all one village. We need a safe haven, and I'm sick and tired of the city of Berkeley. Whenever we say safe haven, give them a spot of privacy, there's silence. And they're not taking any money from the city of Berkeley, and they're doing the job that the city should be doing. It's a broken system, and they just think they can sweep these people
away. And they'll be doing it again on Tuesday, I imagine.
I imagine that they won't be talking to the people that know best how to take care of other people in very primitive, simple conditions. These people create a community. They do outreach. They create a safe environment.
And, of course, what the speaker is talking about is first they came for the homeless and other encampments, perhaps. And Tuesday is the Berkeley City Council meeting time. I think they meet every week, not every other week. It's been a while since I was at a Berkeley City Council meeting, but we were actually at the very edge of the, I don't want to say the lion's den, that doesn't sound right, the wolves' den, the porkers' den, something like that. City Hall was the area where the first They Came for the Homeless encampment was set up, and where this interview's series of interviews was taking place.
They're
talking about first they
women.
Came for the homeless?
I'm talking about an intentional community, of which first they came the homeless is right on the firing line. People think people who have houses or and don't talk to people or people in government think that if you allow a person to have a safe bit of privacy, a cardboard box, a tent, a little room where they have dignity, that it's just going to create more of that. And it's not. People
kind of drive away the tourists as well.
I think that they think that it will drive away property values, and that's wrong because it's the little people that help the little merchants. And so that there is an economy for the immense amount of problems that we're having ecologically with fires, unaffordable housing, and all this other corruption where their children and they, you know, we all become old, and there's going to be more people out here, which will break the idea of prejudice, but we have to break this now because people can't wait for the long picture. They need things now for
You're
their
survival. Indoors yourself.
I am indoors.
Have you been outdoors?
I have been out. The only no, not really, but the only time I was.
Most of us haven't been.
The only time I was outdoors when I was looking for a place, I got constipation. I felt ill, and I was just couch surfing. And so I think that the survivors are heroes that are out here, and their hearts are huge.
Carol, have you been outside?
I have.
How long and for what periods?
Almost a year. This was before I'd ever heard the word homeless, and it was just being on the road. I really wanted to know if there was as much cruelty and sexism. Every workplace I had in California was so predatory that I thought, maybe it's better at the other end of the country. And believe it or not, I hitchhiked eventually to Maine, thinking, well, that's the other end of the country. Maybe men aren't so predatory there. That's how young I was. My first night waiting tables at a resort, I quit. Yeah, after being pawed and groped and so forth. And I went from job to job and city to city, basically sleeping in ditches. And
Where was this?
The best place I slept was in, I guess it was 70. It was the year Nixon resigned. Was that
74?
73, I think. Yeah, the whole year was Watergate was building. And then I remember I was in Maine when he resigned. And a whole bunch of us stood outside of a bar that had a TV where so many of us, we couldn't fit in the bar and watched him resign on the TV, you know. We weren't even celebratory. We just wanted to figure out what was going on. It was quite a strange thing. But I went, I worked on a farm. I mean, I milked cows. I was in construction. I did all kinds of things just trying to see if I was right, that it was everywhere, and I was right. It's everywhere. And so I ended up coming back to California and working here because it seemed like...
What kind of work?
I did everything. I mean, I've scooped ice cream and pumped cappuccinos, and my favorite kind of job, though, was maintenance, because usually you didn't have to talk to people, and you're on your own. Yeah, pretty much you do a good job. They're not going to bother you. So I did a lot of that, and then realized that there was no prejudice against you for having dropped out of UC Berkeley. They just would take you back in. So eventually, and it was really cheap in those days. I mean, seriously, it was like $60 or something per quarter.
I
think it's like $12,000 now, or probably more. It's huge.
Minimum wage jobs in the summers as a nurse's aide, and went through, till I dropped out, went through UC the rest of the year. Sustain myself on what I saved during the summer.
Sarah Menifee.
I remember was the minimum wage.
Or loans or anything. It was paying.
And rents were cheap. And you could put yourself through school. I tell that
money
to...
for marijuana.
Play guitar. I started playing guitar in town, and I still am a musician.
You know, they can do it then. What's wrong now?
That's the thing. What's wrong now is they've allowed rents to skyrocket, and housing is a human need. So
and the education is, they're blowing a financial bubble with this education scam, and they're doing it on the backs of the young who have no future at all.
Yeah, that university education, you see, used to be free. So it was a model that worked at one time, and it can work again. So it's so simple. But I was on the road a long time and just stayed out of the way, really. I lived in national parks and stuff like that. Everybody knows how. I lived in a little orange tube tent. I was a really good tenter. I could live, it could snow and there'd be no water in my tent. Yeah.
So you are not simply a bourgeois looking in, you are a person who's actually had some experience with homelessness.
I don't know what bourgeois is. I think I might be bourgeois.
Well, you may be. I'm bourgeois, so.
I'm not sure what that means. Yeah, I'm like way behind the terminology.
It means you own the corporation.
I own the corporation? Oh, yeah.
Are you, or you support them?
Yeah, it means you own the means of production.
Oh, okay.
It doesn't mean you. You know, I had a young woman in Occupy tell me she was a capitalist because she worked for a bank. I said, do you own the bank?
There you go.
No, then you're not. Then you're a worker.
People
don't understand class.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm bourgeois because I wear high heels. I mean, come on. It's just people have such...
Yeah. You can have a bourgeois mentality, though.
Sure, you could have a mentality, but it's not about mentality. It's about, you know, what do you own? What do you own? Do you own the means of production? We're really not taught that.
I saw you talking to one.
I understand that.
Yeah.
This is Tim.
Hey, Tim. Do you mind being recorded, Tim, for free radio?
It's okay.
And this is another one by Randy Rainbow. It's called A Song for Indiana. I may have played it before, but here it comes again if that's true.
Thank you. God bless you. And God bless the great state of Indiana.
F*** you, Indiana. F*** you, Indiana. F*** you, Indiana. Let me say it once again. F*** you, Indiana, f*** you, Indiana, f*** you, and your antiquated laws from 1910. If you're wondering why I'm making this declaration, can we talk about your blatant discrimination? And specifically, here's the target of my frustration. There is just one hick who can suck my d***. F*** you, Indiana, f*** you, Lafayette, Columbus, Kokomo, and f*** your stupid Cardinals. Go f*** yourself, Angola, eat my ass, Indianapolis, and French Lick can lick my balls.
Fact. Some of the entertainment industry's most prominent gay artists come from Indiana. To name just a few, Adam Lambert, Cole Porter, Ryan Murphy, and Brendan Fraser. Known for its beautiful cornfields, Indiana is one of our country's leading corn-growing states.
Because there's nothing gay about that.
Fact. By signing into law this RFRA, which, by the way, stands for Really F***ing Ridiculous Asshole, Governor Mike Pence is shamelessly enabling discrimination against the LGBT community. Fact. Orville Redenbacher was a power bottom. Don't shoot the messenger.
F*** you, Indiana, and Fort Wayne, and Mishawaka. F*** you, Greenwood, Richmond, Crown Point, and Peru. Go f*** your motor speedway. F*** the Scottish Rite Cathedral. F*** you, Victory Field and Holiday World. F*** the Children's Museum of Indianapolis. F*** the Black Pine Animal Sanctuary and Mesker Park Zoo and Botanic Garden in Evansville. F*** you, Indiana. Not you, Indiana. F*** you, Indiana. And f*** you, too.
Oh, he's actually really cute.
Thank you. God bless you. And God...
And that song, A Song for Indiana, was created long before Pence was a VP designate or even VP candidate. Well, I should have mentioned this before because it started at 6:30, but a meeting, I think it's the final meeting before the, I'm not quite sure of this, but at least an article in the Ascent Anal, that's the Santa Cruz Sentinel, by Stephen, I think it's Kessler is his name, I hope I'm not mispronouncing it, attacking the boondoggle funding of a library in the kind of the basement of a garage structure that the city wants to build and doesn't really care what happens to the library, it sounds like, or maybe they're saving money on building the library by taking the building funds out of money that was appropriated for other purposes, bond issue for, I was expanding Highway 1 and parking structures and that sort of thing. I'm not even sure if that's entirely accurate. Anyway, there's a meeting tonight. It's already begun. It started at 6:30 Thursday evening. That's tonight, the 25th of January, and it's down on the second floor of the library. If you want to go and check out what's happening with that, raise your voice. Some activists already have. I probably can learn more about it by kind of Googling around or Facebooking around online to find out about it. I haven't researched it very much. I've got a few people I've spoken to. I think I even interviewed a person or two about it, but it's up for discussion or up for protest, at least, tonight. And I think you can still get down there even though the meeting has begun. Again, it's 6:30, second floor of the downtown Santa Cruz Library. And now it's back to the Cracker Box discussion, or Cracker Barrel discussion, I should say, around the first they came for the homeless encampment, the meeting of homeless activists to support first they came for the homeless and to bring the issue of homeless civil rights to the attention of the UN rapporteur, which I am becoming increasingly convinced we probably aren't going to get to in this meeting much of, but maybe a little, so don't go away.
Heard that interested you that you want to comment on, if anything.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear
you. You were listening to some of the conversation?
Oh, I was just observing the conversation, and it seemed I didn't hear any of the conversation. But
are you outside yourself? You don't have to answer.
I am outside, yes.
You're one of those outsiders, in other words.
No, I'm curious. Are you part of the tent group or interested in it?
Yeah, I'm part of the tent group.
Uh-huh.
For how long have you been?
If
you wish to say.
It would be like just over 2 months.
And before this, you were indoors, outdoors, on your own?
A mixture. So I was traveling and by bicycle, and so staying outdoors while traveling, and then staying on some farms and doing work trade with different people.
What
so
farms?
On and off again, outside.
What farms?
There's some farms up in Oregon, one in particular that I stayed at. It was really nice.
How cool.
Yeah.
I worked on a farm in Vermont for a long while.
In the winter?
Yeah. Well, at the edge, the beginning edge of winter. But it was very, very cold. And I slept. I had a nice place, I thought, in the hay in the barn.
And are you working here now? Or are you a lazy guy laying around in a tent? Tell us the truth.
I have been working like a day a week, maybe. But my goal is to see what kind of volunteer stuff in regards to urban gardening or urban forestry, permaculture, anything in that vein or that nature is going on in the Bay. So be working but not making too much money.
But surviving well. Your clothes look relatively clean, I must say.
Yeah, well, I saved up some money so that I could travel and I could study things that don't pay but matter to me.
Coming from a well-to-do family, perhaps?
No. They're well... they have great souls. They're well...
What does your mom do?
My mom just raised me and my siblings.
And your dad?
He works for he drives a light rail, like a public transportation system.
Still employed?
He is, yeah.
That sounds good.
Yeah.
I have a question for you, Tim, if you don't mind. Do any of the people in the tent group here go to the city council meetings or the meetings when they happen?
Some, but in this particular group, I don't think that's happened recently.
I'm just curious because it's just right up the stairs here.
Right.
Those are the people who could change so much if they wanted to. Yeah.
I think the city council does have some power to change local regulation, and I think that is a big thing that people need to fight for is zoning. Zoning regulations have been made to support industry. So having minimum square footage or having maximum or minimum wall thickness is prohibits ecological building, and it prohibits people from living in a more simple way, which will ultimately help the earth. That's the greatest travesty is that the system's approach seems to be to force everyone to live a standard of life that will eventually kill the planet. There's a balance, some kind of balance. If for me personally, part of why I like to travel and stay outside. I stayed outside in my hometown because I wanted to learn how to live more simply. And I wanted the freedom to not have to work 40 hours a week in order to survive.
How long were you outside your hometown?
I didn't live outside in the winter. It was a little too cold for me to...
And your hometown is?
Boulder, Colorado.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure that I've totaled up all of the time, but probably... A little under 2 years, maybe a little more, somewhere around 2 years.
So it's a lifestyle choice, as the NIMBYs would put it.
Well, I found that if I don't have a room in a house, then I can't acquire stuff I don't need, and I do feel guilty when I know that my warmth in the winter is coming from. Burning of fuels, and I, you know, when I had a car, I did feel guilty about it. So part of the reason I personally choose to live like this is because I would like to not feel guilty about the things that I'm consuming. I still do, because I forget my, you know, reusable cup, or I choose to eat things that aren't, you know, perfectly, you know, local or fair trade, or there's a million ways in which I can inspire myself to feel guilty, but I'm just trying to work toward a lifestyle that I can feel proud of. And at the same time, I have, you know, this compassion for people who have no other option. And I think that needs to be addressed. There will always be people in every society that don't have enough money to pay for rent, and that doesn't mean they should be excluded from those parts of the world. There has to be some understanding, and
well, there are those who disagree with the entire nature of rent, as you know.
Right. Well, that is, you know, certain individuals certainly are fighting against the idea of private property and abuse of land and the whole concept of...
Oh, I'm really enjoying hearing you speak.
Oh, thank you. So I'm certain that there are individuals in the encampments who are fighting against personal property and just the idea of control over everything and capitalism, to each to different extents. I'm not sure exactly.
I got a question about this encampment. I see that I was told there are two different sections to the encampment. Well, this is first the camp for the homeless, and that's a different section. Is that accurate?
I wouldn't say that there's ever been any sections created. I think people will always self-organize in ways that feels most comfortable to them. And
organizing in different sections?
Yeah, well, I guess you could say that on the other side of the sidewalk, they've been recently organizing and having meetings.
You don't mean the ones we're at here, the other side of the sidewalk?
The other side of the sidewalk, just you know, 100 yards away.
That away?
Yeah, or 100 feet away.
Over there.
Yeah,
I'm pointing to the right side of City Hall as we look on it.
Right. I try not to spend too much time watching people, you know, to figure out exactly what they're doing. But I know that people started gathering there just a week ago. They're not coming to the meetings, so they're not, I guess as you can say, technically part of the group, but I think they feel safe, like some...
Well, and I wanted... I didn't have an opportunity to talk to the judge about this, but he asked the same question that you're asking when we were arguing about this.
About everybody seeing this and coming in. And
maybe you can also use this as an opportunity to talk about the case, because
yes,
I'm very interested in it,
yes.
So we don't know about it. So,
well, I can, just as a brief background, the case was handwritten by Jim. I don't know where Jim went. and I think Adam participated in the handwritten portion of that case. And a few individuals, when they were living on property that it became clear was Bart owned and Berkeley managed, but Bart owned property, which is our rapid transit train. And they handwrote...
Is Bart a private company or is it...
It's a municipal transit authority.
It is.
Bay Area Rapid Transit.
Right. It has an elected board of supervisors, but has some like quasi-private... workings. They do own property. It's not exactly public property, but it's not private property either.
They have their own police.
They have their own police department, which I'm not sure is
four
true
counties,
of every...
huge.
Yeah, I'm not sure own police department is everybody's model of municipal transit authority, but this one does. And so they handwrote a temporary restraining order and a request for preliminary injunction to prevent BART from moving them, from evicting them. And I don't think so. I think it was just a temporary restraining.
It's just restraining order.
And then we were asked, because we've worked with folks on an advocacy level for a long time, we were asked to step in and argue the case and ultimately took the case with my boss, Dan Siegel, and I. And so we went and we were successful in obtaining a temporary restraining order, which got them a week of reprieve while we then wrote a more robust request for preliminary injunction, which we ultimately lost because of the property being Bart's property as opposed to the city of Berkeley. I think it would have been very different if it was on the city, and if we're forced to do that within the scope of the lawsuit with this encampment, I think we would be more successful. But we did not win the preliminary injunction, but we amended the complaint and added kind of all of the claims that had been brewing for a while, including the, you know, 4th and 14th Amendment claims that they seized property. And I'm trying to see if we're successful, but trying to also argue that seizing a property from an individual who's homeless implicates a liberty interest as well, because it is about life and death for them, and was certainly for Mike. And then that they don't comply with the Americans with Disabilities Act when people request assistance for you know, either more time to move their stuff or assistance getting their stuff back when the city puts it at the dump, which is where they store people's property if they store it. And then the Eighth Amendment claim, because they had arrested, and the reason I knew December 4th was because that's when I met Mike, because I came and represented him in a criminal case when him and a couple of other people were arrested and cited for the penal code statute 647E. It's essentially, it says that you can't camp on private or public property without permission. Period.
That's what level of legislation
statewide,
is that?
Statewide, yeah.
The
it's
law,
like
I know the law by heart. Who lodges in any vehicle, structure, building, or place, whether public or private, without the permission of the owner. Key now, without the permission of the owner's
public.
Whether public or private.
Like, who owns the public
and then
land?
It gets all fancy and it says, or the person in possession thereof and all that stuff. But we stop when it says without the permission of the owner, right? Because we own this property. I'm not a lawyer, but I read that. And I said, wait, if I own that and I give myself permission to be there, why can't I take care of myself on that piece of property? You know, but of course, everybody's got all these arguments that go against just, you know, that one, it's three words. And that's pretty clear to me, okay? Without the permission of the owner, And the law is 130 years old or something. It's used for kicking people out of hotels, you know, way back when. But now it's being applied statewide to the homeless. And it's used as an excuse to confiscate their gear. And here's what they do, especially in San Francisco. They keep your tent or your sleeping bag or whatever as evidence of lodging, okay? You really think they're going to give that back to you in a year? Because they can hold it for a year. And that's how they take, that's one of the games that they play.
And so we
They throw it away.
The city moved to dismiss the lawsuit, saying that we didn't state any claims, and you know, they the deputy city attorney who argued against me said very, like, earnestly, oh, the city never takes anybody's stuff. The city never, you know, you'll see, Your Honor, when you look at the videos of these raids, which apparently the city of Berkeley has cut videos, that we don't do anything wrong, which I find inflammatory because, you know, everybody here has watched it. I have watched it personally. The way that they treat stuff, we've gone to retrieve the stored items. One day they had stored it in a you know, dumpster,
big roll off,
big dumpster.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
With a tarp over it during a rainstorm, and so two of the more able-bodied individuals in the encampment had to, you know, strategically get the water off so they didn't soak all the property when they pulled the tarp off. And then you open it, and it's everybody's stuff mangled in with garbage that they had picked up that day as well, people's IDs, medication, and was in there in addition to their tents, their clothing,
tablets,
for protection from
phones,
the element, and then a lot of electronics as well that are, you know, the way that you, any human keeps connected in this, you know, in America. And it was atrocious, the way that they stored it. And the only reason that folks were able to get it back, they have a process where they say, call one woman, and you get her voicemail, and then you leave her a message, and she has to be able to call you back.
Oh my God!
Yeah, and then if you're able to accomplish that, then she apparently will facilitate people getting their items back. But I don't know anybody who was successful in doing that. The way we got it the one time was because there was a new mayor who thought that he was going to be quite progressive on the homeless, and he had this assistant who was just like, I don't know what to do. So somebody called her, and she organized it. She was like, I'm going to figure out what to do. I'm going to get this. And she helped us get the stuff back. And then she was personally offended by the fact that the folks who were getting their stuff back were upset of the way it was stored, because she was like, well, we did this for you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You've never been able to do this before, and we did this for you. And it's like, great, you let people pull their broken items out of a garbage bin.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's tangential to the lawsuit, which is the judge just ordered on Friday that we get to proceed on our Fourth Amendment claims, the property, the 14th Amendment claim, which I think will advance the liberty interest as well. And then the First Amendment claims,
right,
which is that this particular encampment, as far as I know, they raid encampments, you know, the same way,
right,
every time.
Right.
But this particular encampment was chased around during a winter, during their, you know, their poor tour, because they were specifically critical of the newly implemented hub, which is in the United States, in order to get certain HUD dollars, housing and urban development dollars, you have to have a coordinated entry system for homeless individuals, and Berkeley was one of the first cities to do that. They created this hub. The hub is a nonprofit that works with other nonprofits, but that's why you go in, you do an intake, and they say, oh, great, we're not, you know, this other place has
it's
to serve you,
right,
so go do an intake with them.
Yeah.
You prove to us you're homeless, prove to us these things,
right,
and then
just
once you've done that, we're going to refer you to another place.
And they're being paid.
What's their budget now, though?
I don't know yet.
$1.7 million, I believe.
$1.7 million a year. And
yeah, they just raised it by about
$600,000. You can't serve your food, so you have to have
Yeah, I mean, like, there are certain ways that they have structured this that is completely tone-deaf to what it is to be, like, a homeless individual and the resources.
So the liberty interest is a constitutional provision?
So under the Constitution, you cannot be deprived liberty without due process. And what's happening
is there a separate right to life?
No.
Provision. So the liberty provision is the life provision.
Yes.
Okay. Sorry, I've never studied U.S. law. So
totally fine. It's ridiculous.
Sometimes.
That's why. And so
it's got all mushed together in one.
Yeah.
Okay.
So under the Constitution, you can, you cannot, and this has been more widely litigated by brilliant people in L.A., Carol Sobel, who you might have heard of as an attorney who does this work for folks on Skid Row. But the due
process.
Carol Sobel, CAROLSOBEL. She's been doing a lot of litigation for years and would be a good person even to get on the phone.
We're going down to Skid Row on Monday night,
yeah,
or Tuesday will be, or Wednesday will be.
I can send you her contact information too if you have not spoken.
Can you jump ahead how far to pass it off to this mayor? This mayor of Berkeley kind of said, it's okay to camp here?
Give me one second and I'll get to that. The liberty without due process, the liberty interests can be created by state action or state law. And so our argument is that that the state has created a liberty interest in being because Berkeley and Oakland, in fact, say, oh, we only respond to complaints from neighbors, right? We don't just go around and evict people.
Yeah.
It's a complaint-driven process.
Yeah.
And so within that, they've created a liberty interest in staying put as long as you don't get a complaint against you.
Right, I see.
And then my argument, which I haven't seen in the law that I've studied, and we'll see if we're able to advance it here, is that if that's true, then you have to create a forum where somebody gets notice of the complaint against them and an opportunity to be heard before they're evicted. Because, and this is important, because the reason that the encampment was evicted from BART property is that there was another encampment that was not an intentional community, that moved in onto the other side of the tracks, and they were not conducting themselves with any set of rules, and as a result, garnered complaints from a lot of neighbors.
You just write an intentional community.
They need to live, too.
Yeah, the fatality is what killed it.
And there was crime that happened there,
right.
And then there was a fatality of a housed woman who came. My understanding was she had an OD, which is a whole nother story. Let's talk about her heroin epidemic.
But she
OD'd there, and so then everybody was up in arms. They're like, this is near a school. It occupies an informal park that we used to use for our children. There's violence there. Eliminate everybody, which is absurd in and of itself, because you don't, you know, when there's some domestic violence dispute in an apartment building, you don't evict all of the apartment residents, right? You police go and deal with the problematic individual or individuals. And that's, you know, not that I love police, but that's what should happen.
The mayor had also said that the police will surgically remove any issues if we complain. The complaints that we have issued to the police have resulted in no shows. No cops have ever shown up.
And so when that encampment moved in, there was, you know, it just created, it spurred this whole problem. I forgot what I was going to say about that specific encampment. What I was going to say is they got the complaints.
Right.
And those complaints were imputed onto the individuals who had lived for 10 months without, you know, without incident on the other side of the tracks.
Oh, I see.
And the resolution to that was no conversation about, are you doing anything that is not, you know, neighborly or not? Are you doing anything that is so contrary to your actual existence here that you need to move? They just said, get out. And so I think that, and in doing so, we know when they come in, they take people's tents, they take people's stuff, and so they're depriving people of
at four
that
in the
liberty
morning, and they're getting double shifts. So we're paying for that. We're paying for the helicopter. We're paying for the dump truck that comes up that they put everybody's stuff on.
I mean, they pay for helicopters to God knows what.
That's just a level of ridiculousness. The amount of money that they spent on us, we still can't find out. We're guesstimating $500,000 during these raids. So if they paid $500,000 to get rid of us, imagine what I could do with that $500,000.
Oh, I read all of them. They gave me 180 complaints. It's part of the record, so I can give you those complaints as well if you're interested.
Most are fabricated.
The city produced complaints. Well, this was against the East Encampment, and it's unclear whether they were fabricated or not. But it is clear that they were saying... There was one man who was like, I don't want this encampment here because it's on the way to when I walk my child to school, and my child shouldn't have to witness that human suffering. So they need to go suffer somewhere else. And that's a mentality that the city respects and appreciates and doesn't try to have a conversation about why that's not appropriate or adequate. And when Ben Bartlett held, who is the city council member covering the area that the encampment used to be in, had the here there sign, and he held a community forum, and I actually wasn't there, so there are other people who can speak to this, but it actually resulted in a conversation that I thought was very helpful for the community. And it would be nice if more of that happened, where where people can get together and really hear each other, right?
That's
see
right.
each other as humans.
Yeah.
The problem, you know, you're never going to fix all of human behavior by saying, like, treat people as human beings. But you get people together and talking and hearing each other out, and it's like, oh, you know, we now can relate.
Do you breathe? Yes, so do I.
Yeah. Interesting. You need to.
That meeting is actually fairly productive, too.
Right. Emily? And no city language whatsoever has been
public. I can't. I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
To address what is.
Just maybe wait 1 second.
It's all about what isn't
permitted. Operators here in town, that if you ever want to have the police enforce trespassing on your property, you have to sign this form that allows them the discretion of enforcement on their own. So there were a couple of us camped, and we only camped overnight, and then we remove ourselves during the day, and we'd leave it clean and orderly. And there was one morning where I had been ill all night, and I was a little slow. I was across the street getting a cup of coffee, and when I came back over, the police had taken all my stuff and was throwing it at the curb, and they were enforcing the no trespassing. And I said, well, it was right across the street. My friend was here, shepherding our stuff and told you it was our stuff. And he said, well, I don't know, it's trash or whatever. And the police officer was saying, we have the power to enforce the trespassing at our own discretion. I said, was there a complaint? Did the business complain? No. Did any of the citizens complain? No. The person that complained is what's called an ambassador. And the ambassadors are hired by the business improvement districts, which are a strange little entity between city and business. And their mission includes what's called monitoring the homeless. What that means, in effect, is waking people up in the morning and telling them to leave. But also, apparently in this case, the ambassador was the originator of the complaint. And so at the moment, your choice is remove your stuff now or they're going to bring a truck by and take it all, which I did. Now, the irony is later that day, the university has become very actively concerned about the homeless and is supposedly investing people and effort into this. Later that day, I spoke at the university with the head of one of the agencies before a class of sociologists about health, old age, and homelessness. And that was my example point just this morning. And so they create their own opportunities. The problem being, in my mind, well, one of them, is that the ambassadors, I believe, are partially funded by money that comes into the area to help the homeless.
Are block by block, okay, which is the downtown business association. They're in like 180 cities. It's privatized sidewalks, it's privatized everything, and it's privatized taxation without representation. I love this. Okay, with the DBA here, what you get is the property owners get a vote in how things develop. The business owners have no say but pay the bill, okay? And they hire the ambassadors. The ambassador's job is to be street janitors and clean up. But what the ambassadors in Berkeley have done, and this is really bad, they beat up a homeless guy a few years ago.
Yes.
Made national news, okay? And then, like, 2 weeks later, up in Canada, another ambassador, block-by-block ambassador, did the same thing. So it's in San Francisco, the ambassadors are very bad, although not as violent. Now, the ambassador situation here in Berkeley, I witnessed them punch out another guy that didn't get reported. Okay, and what they're doing is they're provoking the homeless into violence and then either abusing them or calling the police.
Is there information somewhere on these ambassadors that we could access?
You could go to Block by Block website.
Like,
that's the name of the
website,
yeah.
I personally heard one of the bosses of the ambassadors giving instructions one morning saying that they weren't receiving enough complaints from businesses and citizens, so they said you need to generate more complaints.
So they can keep getting funded.
No, just so that they had no reason to keep people out of the area. They needed complaints. The ambassadors were told by their superior that they needed to generate more complaints.
Also, there has been violence during the raids by the police against elderly people who have canes, and other people were beat up during those raids.
We got video.
Barbara maybe could talk about that.
Three individuals. This is one of our plaintiffs who got
just one second. We didn't totally finish, I think, on the case, the liberty interest case. So you've been granted permission to proceed on the merits.
On the merits, on the First, Fourth, and 14th Amendment claims. The judge has invited us ask to file an amended complaint. We have to draft the complaint so he can see it. But to reinstate the Eighth Amendment issue, he just said we didn't plead enough facts, which I think, you know, was a fair assessment of the complaint that we...
Right. Which is the Eighth Amendment?
The Eighth Amendment is cruel and unusual punishment.
Oh, okay. Yep.
And the law is such that you can't... there's some good law that suggests that you can't threaten people with arrest or arrest people for a condition that is unavoidable, right? Some immutable characteristic.
Right.
The Supreme Court case was about drug addiction, right? You can't criminalize drug addiction. Obviously, you can criminalize drug use, but not just the mere addiction. And in the past, the homelessness has not been found to be like an unavoidable, just based on the records that have been presented to courts, not found to be like unavoidable. And we think that in this particular moment, in this particular city, we will be able to demonstrate a strong record of that. But we'll have to amend the complaint to proceed on that claim if we'd like to.
Right, I see.
But yes, as of right now, like we can start our discovery process with the city and we proceed.
In the U.S. context, it's probably using international human rights law may not be useful, but so that you know, I did write a report on the relationship between the right to life and the right to housing that may be useful in your liberty arguments.
Certainly.
Just so that you know, we can make it available to you.
That would be wonderful. Yeah, part of what's nice about this particular judge is that he's a very fearless judge.
Right.
He's been on the bench for a long time. He's wildly smart and very, you know... And I think he lives in the community. He lives either in Berkeley or near Berkeley.
Right.
Seems to me. I don't know for sure, but from his statements, I think he does.
Oakland.
He lives in Oakland? Okay.
Right.
And he... there's a report that came out. I don't know if you've seen it. I'm happy to share that with you when I share the other documents.
Sure.
By the Law Center on Homelessness and Poverty.
Oh, yeah.
That basically was their formal retraction of their previous position that no encampments as a path to housing.
Right.
And they've now said that encampments have to be a part of the path to housing.
Right.
Otherwise, you're going to continue to waste money fighting people on their right to like exist, and you're not going to put that money towards actual programming and housing.
Right.
So we asked the judge...
Is this Eric Tarzan?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. We asked the judge to take judicial notice of that during our hearing, and he did. He accepted it, and I hope has read it, because I think that will help inform him.
Yeah.
So to the extent that this report would be useful for him just to understand...
Yeah.
There is no real, you know, human rights... I guess we did. What did we ratify as the United States?
Well, you've ratified the
economic.
Haven't, but you have ratified the civil and political rights, the covenant on civil and political rights, and it contains the liberty provision, or life, liberty, and security of the person. That's a Canadian articulation, but it's like that. And so my report taps into that.
That would be,
then,
that would be very useful.
I also did a report on homelessness. That may be useful. Anyway, I'll just give those to you. You can scan them. They're only 20 pages long. They're in easy, you know, so you can determine whether they might be useful. But the links between homelessness and the right to life and liberty and all that are fairly weak at the international level. I will say that, just so that you know. I'm trying to beef it up. So your case is of interest to me, too, because international law can be informed by domestic jurisprudence, obviously. So. Anyway, just that's a bit of an aside, but yes.
But yeah, I think that would be very interesting. And if we amend the complaint, perhaps there is a hook into, you know, that we're in violation of the international
political rights, or even just to reference it to support. Because I mean, I don't know about you, but in Canada, I'm a litigator and I do this stuff back in Canada when I'm not special rapporteur. And we use international law only to support our domestic arguments.
Yeah.
So we don't say, Canada's in the courts, we don't say Canada's in violation of blah, blah, blah. But we say you have to interpret this section of our Constitution in a manner that is compatible with international human rights law because we've ratified, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So it would be more like that, a supporting argument rather than a direct, I would not advise it in the U.S.
No, yeah, I was going to say, in this judge, I don't think would appreciate it.
No, and in Detroit, they tried around the bankruptcy hearings of the city of Detroit and the right to water stuff that was going on. They tried to make a direct right-to-water argument, and we kept saying, I won't do that. And, of course, it was a bankruptcy court. So you can imagine what they're like, you really want this. So anyway, that's a detail and aside. But
yeah, it would be very interesting.
So, and do you have hearing dates yet?
Our next date is February 8th.
Oh, right.